Hello, welcome to The 30 Project. My name's John Naylor, and I'm trying to make sense of growing up one conversation at a time. If you've not listened before, I've just turned 30 and I'm feeling quite a lot of pressure to figure out what I want to do with my life. It's something I think a lot of people are going through at this age, so I'm aiming to get as many different perspectives as possible on reaching this milestone. Hopefully through these chats, we'll also hear some great stories and find out how different people have approached and been affected by the notion of turning 30. I've really loved reading your emails too. Some of the stories that have been sent in are absolutely remarkable, and I'm hoping to have a chat with a few of these people for future shows very soon. Don't forget that if you've got a view or a story about turning 30 and how it's affected you, you can get in touch through my website, the30project.co.uk. That's 30, the number, not the word. Or you can email direct to hello@the30project.co.uk. Again, 30, not the word 30. So on to our next conversation. This one is with Courtney Hamilton. Courtney is someone who I've met through her husband. He's an old friend of mine. She's an American PhD student studying at Stanford in California, who's 27 at the moment and still has 2 years left on her doctorate in Iberian and Latin American culture and literature. Courtney's definitely one of the smartest people I know and has a really different perspective on the whole turning 30 thing, as she spent almost all of her adult life as a student. It's also the fact that she's going to be finishing her qualification just before turning 30 and will then be entering a really competitive job market in academia. We also talked a bit about the prospect of kids and planning for a family when you're a woman who's very focused on her career, and there's a ridiculous Game of Thrones analogy in there as well. So let's get into it. And first off, I asked her how she's feeling about approaching the end of her 20s.
At this point, it's kind of every birthday brings on all these questions, which I think are really some of the big questions of your project that really need to be asked, right? But it is like, what am I doing? Am I actually good at it? And does anyone care? For me, the pressure comes from having spent years and years of doing very specialized training, right? And not only that, but personally, I've racked up not an insignificant amount of debt from doing a master's degree that then led to this PhD program I'm in. And I'm 27 and I'm still a student. So for me, thinking about 30 is about breaking out. And you want to be able to look around and say, yeah, things are different than they were when I was 20, for example. And when you're still a student at 27, it can be really hard to measure that progress. I don't own a home. I all these things that I kind of don't have, these traditional like adulthood check, boxes that you can check. I feel a lot of pressure to sort of get it right, if you will, because it's taken so much time to lead to this point, and I've done so much specialist training, so much specialization, that it's like, oh my God, if I don't get a good job in a good place where I want to live and really start picking up momentum to head down this path that my peers have been on for, honestly, years now, will all this have been worth it?
I think that really touched on one of the reasons in particular that I wanted to talk to you, was because when I sort of changed my opinion on what I was doing with journalism and I changed course at like 28, but then I got into this period of wondering what it is that I should do, that felt like a significant wasted investment of my time. But then I guess for you, that feeling must be intensely magnified because you've invested, you know, your whole life up to this point into getting to this point, you know? You must feel that quite acutely.
I do. And well, so the interesting thing for me is I decided that I wanted to get a PhD when I was 14. So number one, nerd alert, who does that? But, it's a slightly different take on the same question, because for me, I know what I want to do and it's this, and, I absolutely have tough days. I have tough weeks and I've had tough years in my program, but I keep coming back to the same thing, and I can't quite imagine myself really doing much else. If it turns out I'm not able to find a job in my field and 3 years from now I turn 30, I could find myself completely spiraling, because I really do want to stay in on this track.
You've got this different target that you've got in front of you of finishing your PhD. Does 30 have the same impact on you, or is it It's not something that you think about quite as much.
No, I do think about it. So my husband is a couple years older than me, and he's turning 30 next weekend. It's a check-in. It's like a forced check-in, right? Where you're like, am I where I want to be? And so far, the answer is no in so many ways. But for me, 30 as well is, I think about where my parents were at 30. My mom had me when she was 30, and I don't think that that's necessarily a fair way to think about it for myself, just because so much about our society has changed, right? But yeah, it's also frustrating to realize that kind of the classic things that you're supposed to have when you're 30, most of which all for me kind of connect back to stability, which again, as we mentioned before, I don't really have, just that those are actually impossible for me. So then there's this question of adjusting like my perception to what I'm actually able to have and do, right? Because there's no way that I'm going to have, for example, a baby, assuming that's something I would even want, right? But there's no way that that's going to happen by the time I'm 30, looking at my mom, for example. So then you just kind of spin yourself around in circles, don't you?
You touched on saying that you're going to want to find a job and you're going to want to be starting to be an earner, but also because you've invested so much in this, you're going to want it to be a job that's like pretty high up near the top of your field. What are your sort of options there?
There's sort of jobs that don't lead to anything, and then jobs that, assistant professor and associate professorships lead to tenure. And so what you see is job postings for tenure track jobs. So you don't, by getting the job, you don't get tenure. But you're put on this track, and if you do everything right, which by the way is a lot of things that you have to do right, I mean, publish books, and you have to really work very hard for a couple years, then you get tenure, which is sort of considered the ultimate job security, and your position is safe. So the goal would be to get one of these tenure track jobs, work very hard, but then keep in mind, right, like let's go back to my timeline. So if I graduate by the time I'm 30, tenure usually takes about 7 years. The tenure track takes 7 years from the time you start the job till the time you hopefully get tenure. Okay, so what? Best case scenario, I'm 37. And then you can call me in 10 years and we can talk about turning 40 and how I've worked my ass off through my 30s. So that's complicated too, right? Because to see 30 as a finish line. And it's what you were mentioning before, right? For me, the much bigger and hopefully this finish line that will come sooner will be finishing my degree. But then to turn 30, but yeah, where does it end?
A lot of the things that you've said so far have made direct or indirect reference to your marriage and your husband. And I guess something that comes out very strongly, both from this and from knowing you both personally, is that it is a real team and a proper partnership. How significant has that partnership been towards your sort of sanity over your, like, since you've been together?
Oh my God, fundamental. I mean, I could have gotten here without my husband because I did actually. I applied and was accepted before we met, but it's sort of everything since arriving, I think he's just been completely fundamental to any success I might fool myself into thinking I've enjoyed. So yeah, I think that we are absolutely a team and we like to think of ourselves as a team. The only thing about being a team, although it's fantastic and it's a great sort of source of support for me, and I would like to think that I offer that same support to my husband now that he's got this full-time job, is that it just, again, ratchets up the anxieties over getting a job and sort of the next step.
And I guess also in terms of how you feel about repaying his faith and his sacrifices as well, I'm sure he would say that he doesn't even consider that. But I know if it was me, I would feel like I have to make good on this because he's given so much already up front. Now I've got to make it worth it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so then what does that look like? And he would say that I'm happy and healthy and that we together are happy and healthy and safe and stable. but I have a different metric. So for me, it's like, no, I need to publish a book someday, you know, and it will be dedicated to him. But you know, I kind of have a different bar. So yeah, you are absolutely right. I think there's a debt there that I'm just not sure how that'll play out.
One of the other podcasts, the guests, he was really happy with his career. He was a teacher and he could see where it was going, but he was really unhappy with his personal life. And because he thought by the time he was this age, he would have a wife and kids, and it just hasn't happened for him. And something that he said that really sort of stood out for me was that he said, if you offered me a trade for the certainty of my career for a wife and kids, I would take it. And I find that a really powerful thing to say, but also like it raises that question of what are the most important things and what do we value the most and what should we value the most?
I think it's an easy way to wash your hands of the whole thing. If you say being happy and healthy and safe and stable and having this really fulfilling relationship in my life is enough, I don't know.
Then I don't really have to try with the other stuff.
Yeah.
So I could just be like the kid on the Fatboy Slim album cover.
Yeah.
I'm number one, so why try harder?
Yeah. Right, yeah, there's no number zero.
I think that's a really good counterpoint to that of thinking, yes, it's great to have these things, but neither, I guess, are the be all and end all. It's that mental sort of question of should you be happy with what you've got or should you always strive for more?
Yeah, well, and I don't mean to be the foil to your previous guest, right? Because I actually really agree. I think that that's a really great sentiment that he expressed, although I mean, I don't want to say great, bittersweet, perhaps. I mean, that's really tough to grapple with. A couple years ago, I was here on campus at an event that a professor kind of adjacent to my department hosted. This event was held at the professor's home. It's this gorgeous big home, and we're outside at this cocktail party and, you know, eating tiny sandwiches. And I turned to my friend and I said, I don't want this. I wouldn't want any of this. Look at this professor. They have tenure and they have a brand new Mercedes, actually a gorgeous car. I would want that, I think. That's the one part I would take. But, you know, this beautiful home and success by every metric, but no children. And so my point a couple years ago to my friend was, you know, I want a life that's perhaps less successful on the work scale, but more successful on the personal scale, right? And since then, my thinking has shifted and I've become absolutely bloodthirsty for success in my professional life. So I think that's where I don't necessarily want to be put in the opposite camp from your previous guest, because my thinking has shifted recently and I'm not so sure it won't shift back.
The last side of things I wanted to touch on was something that I know nothing about, but the pressures of being a woman and growing up and getting older, because you have to consider age with regards to kids. How much of that enters your consciousness of approaching 30 and even just of getting older?
Yeah, it's huge for me. And my husband has expressed interest in starting a family.
You said that in such like a press release kind of way.
Okay, so that's the press release version. The real life version is the day we met. And to be fair, you know, we met at a house party and everybody was enjoying themselves and drinks were had. But also, if you know my husband, you know, he's a really genuine, really family oriented person who's like incapable of lying because he turns bright red. And the day that we met, he was like, yeah, it's one of my life goals to be a dad. Like, I really want to be a father and have a family. So first of all, coming on way too strong for the day that we met. But I don't scare easily. So yeah. Right. So that's something that, I mean, and I think anyone who's kind of thinking about that kind of thing is going to be up against someone else's viewpoint, right? Their partners. Mm-hmm. No, I shouldn't say up against, but it is about this question of, you know, what's important to me, and I would rather have a job than I mean I get deep satisfaction from my work, so I very much want to keep the job I will hopefully have. But all of that is to say that I don't necessarily see myself becoming a stay-at-home mom. People say that you shouldn't have kids while you're on the tenure track. I feel like the deck is stacked against me. I feel like I will have to plan and calculate like I've never had to plan and calculate before. I think it will be like the single biggest undertaking we'll sort of take on if that's the path we decide to go down. So I feel like it's really unfair the way the world works. And especially in the US, we don't have, government mandated maternity leave. And I feel like with the current political climate, there's a lot that's up in the air. I feel uneasy about a lot of things. And so in some ways, I think my response to that is just to keep my head down and keep working, because I know that we're not going to start a family before I'm 30 and probably not soon after. But yeah, it's absolutely, it's a big concern. And I think it's a concern. It's just interesting to me that I consider it one of the factors that I need to, one of the elements that I kind of need to factor into my possible success, right? Like, it needs to be factored into my plan. Absolutely. Like, what to do if you're invited for an interview, an in-person interview, and you have a big pregnant belly. Will that influence their decision? It shouldn't, but it will inevitably. So all these kinds of things. Yes, it's a major concern, and I don't have an answer for it, but it absolutely concerns me in a way that I'm confident it doesn't concern my male counterparts.
The only way that I can sort of make an analogy out of it is that it's, you know, in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Where the White Walkers are just, they're just coming. They're just coming. There's nothing you can do. They're coming. They're coming around the wall. And people don't, they sort of know that they're coming and they know there's not a lot they can do, but they're all just sort of cracking on with life anyway.
They are.
But that does not detract from the fact that is an inevitability. Without wishing to equate babies to death-eating zombies.
I was going to say, yeah, in this scenario, the babies are the soul-sucking snow
monsters. The things that destroy everything, yeah.
I mean, like the undead, right? They're zombies. Yeah.
Yeah, but other than that, it's the perfect analogy.
Yeah, and no, other than that, flawless. Here's why your Game of Thrones thing breaks down. The women are prepared for the White Walkers. The women are prepared and they are preparing. And
so the women are the Night's Watch. It all works.
Yes. Oh, no, that works as well, though, because the Night's Watch is comprised of one gender. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
And they have to sacrifice everything and nobody thanks them for it.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. I've nailed it.
If you ask my husband, does it piss you off? His answer would be the same, because it pisses everyone off. Everyone who thinks about it, but ultimately the hardest decisions have to be made and the hardest work is done by the woman, the working woman. The conversations are, how will you manage your time, manage your career? What sacrifices will you make in order to have a baby? And that shouldn't be the case. Sacrifices should not have to be made. And there should be sufficient resources and lack of prejudice such that women are able to do what they want and have the support they need to carry on being, you know, badass, ass-kicking, working women.
So there you go. I think it was a really important point at the end there about trying to change the perception of and support for women who want to have families and maintain their careers. And interestingly, another really different perspective on 30, measuring success and the way in which even knowing what you want to do can have its own set of pressures. That's all for episode 5, but as I mentioned before, if you have any questions for me, suggestions for the show, or if you think you'd be a great person to chat to, you can email hello@the30project.co.uk. Visit the website, the30project.co.uk, or you can find the podcast on Facebook, 30 Project Podcast. Hopefully the next episode will be up sometime next week. Thanks once again for listening, and I will speak to you soon. Bye-bye.